Well, hello everybody. This is Jeff McManus and welcome to another podcast today on planningtogrow.com. Recently, we've had a lot of rain in the area. Most of the southeast has gotten quite a bit of rain here in September 2009. It's been an unusual wet September. And today we're going to talk a little bit about fire ants and fire ant control and those pesky rascals and how you get rid of them. They seem to be popping up more and more as after a rainstorm. So we're in for a big treat today. We have Dr. Blake Layton from Mississippi State University from the Extension Service there, and he is going to talk to us today about fire ant control. Welcome aboard, Dr. Layton. How are you?
I'm fine, Jeff. Good to visit with you today.
Well, good. We're really happy that you're with us. I want to dive right into the fire ants and how we've all have them across the southeast. Fire ants weren't native to America, were they? Didn't they come from somewhere else and have been pretty invasive here?
That's right, Jeff. We got fire ants in the U.S. about 1918. We think they came from South American countries, Brazil and Argentina. And we actually have two species. First, we got the black imported fire ant, and then in about the 1930s, red imported fire ant came along, and it was so much more aggressive and more invasive that it has pretty much displaced the black imported fire ant, so it's our dominant species now.
Are there any benefits at all to having fire ants?
Well, that's a good question, because there actually are if you're a row crop farmer. I know in some cases if you're doing no-till production where you're not disturbing the mounds, fire ants will prey on other pest insects in the field and actually help protect the crops, and we see that in crops like cotton, soybeans, and sugarcane down in Louisiana.
Okay. What about to campuses like Mississippi State campus, Ole Miss campus, or my house, your house? Are there any benefits to having them around the house?
I can't think of any in that case. In those cases, they're pretty much considered pests, okay. Primarily because of the damage they cause to people when we get in their mounds, but also because their mounds are unsightly.
Right. Well, where do fire ants like to nest? Any special area that they really like more than others?
Well, if you've noticed, you don't see as many fire ant mounds in dense woods as you do out in an open yard. So they tend to like an open savanna-type habitat. That's where they came from, a treeless-type situation. And so that's when we see more fire ants in open, sunny areas. They like that sun shining on their mound.
That makes a lot of sense, because you go, when you're riding down the road on a pasture, if you see a pasture that hadn't been treated, you just see hundreds of fire ant mounds everywhere. So I guess they do like that open area. That makes a lot of sense. What about, are there any predators? Do we have any natural predators here in the United States that works on them?
Well, Jeff, I understand that if you go down to Brazil and Argentina where fire ants are native, and I've been in Honduras, and this seems to be true to me, they have fire ants, but they're not as abundant. They're just not as big a deal for them down there as they are here. And the reason is, as you're suggesting, is we don't have their natural predators up here, and that's why they did so well once they got here, displacing a lot of our native ant species. So we don't have any natural predators, fire ants, natural parasites. There are some that are being released now and beginning to be established. One that you may have heard of is this decapitating fly. But to be honest, I don't look for that to have a huge impact on our fire ant populations in the southeast.
Mm-hmm. Why are fire ants so challenging to deal with? Why is it so hard to eradicate them?
Well, that's a good question. And you know, many homeowners ask me that. They say, you know, I had my yard completely free of fire ants last year, and now they're back. What happened? And it has to do with the way that fire ants reproduce. Throughout the growing season, the warm parts of the year, they reproduce by swarming, unmated queens fly into the air. They mate with males in the air. Then those mated queens fall back to the ground wherever the wind has carried them. And that may be several hundred yards to several miles away from where they emerge from. So you can have a lawn entirely free, but you've got these newly mated queens continually, literally raining back down into the lawn to try to start new colonies.
How many typical, you mentioned the queens and so forth. How many queens are there in a nest? Is there only one queen, or can there be multiple queens?
Well, most of the fire ant mounds you see obviously only have one queen, but we do have a certain strain of fire ant out there now that has what we call multiple queens. They do have multiple queens in the colony. And those mounds that you mentioned in pastures where it seems like you can almost walk from across the pasture, walk from mound to mound, they're so dense, those
right.
are usually multiple queen situations. They tolerate one another better.
Okay.
But most mounds only have one queen.
Well, you always hear about you could dig up a mound and put it with other fire ants. And we're going to talk a little bit more about control, but is that a wives' tale, or do other fire ants not like other fire ants and they can actually fight and kill each other?
But yeah, different mounds of fire ants do, they are adversarial to one another. They defend their turf, so to speak.
Okay.
And so, you know, that is true. If you dump two mounds together, they will fight with each other, but that's not necessarily a really good control technique.
Right. My luck is, as I'm carrying them over with a shovel handle, they're crawling up my arm and biting me, so I don't like that technique.
that's been my experience with that effort, yeah.
How many fire ants would you say, and I know it's hard to tell, but an average mound, if you see a mound in your yard or on campus that may be 6 inches tall on the ground, what is there a particular number that you assess to, or how many you think might be in there? Is there thousands, hundreds, tens of thousands of fire ants in there?
Yeah, by the time a mound gets big enough that you can see it above the grass in your yard, it's got several thousand ants in it.
Okay.
One of those really big mounds, like the largest you see, they can have up near a quarter of a million
wow.
fire ant workers in there, and they all can sting. You know, all the workers can. But now this brings up another point. It's what I try to tell homeowners is that for every large mound you can see in your yard, there's a lot of small mounds that are just getting started from those queens that fell down into the yard. So when we try to control fire ants, we want to control those small mounds as well as the big ones we can see.
Now, tell us a little bit about how a fire ant operates as far as we've talked about mounds and what we can see, but tell us a little bit what they do as far as protection of the queen and what's going on underground that we normally don't see.
Well, I mean, the earth that you see above the ground is basically earth that they've excavated out of galleries, so that represents galleries that they've excavated down below. And those can radiate around that mound, mostly directly under it. But then, have you ever wondered where the door is on a fire ant mound?
Sure.
You know, you look at that mound and it doesn't look like there's ants going and coming, because they're not. They have these underground tunnels, maybe a half inch below ground, that radiate from around that mound, and they exit in hidden areas under the grass 5, 10, 15, 25 feet away from the mound. So the workers use those to come and go, and then they leave there and they go forage where they look for food, and that could be things like dead insects, seeds, things of that nature.
Okay. Now, is it true? I had heard this, and I don't know if it's true, but that they're real sensitive to vibration. Fire ants are, and if they sense it, say for example, I know on campus we drive up on a golf cart to maybe treat a fire ant bed, or homeowner drives up. Do they sense that vibration and immediately start to protect the queen or escort her out or lock her down, or is that just talk per se?
Well, they can sense those vibrations, but usually they won't try to protect the queen unless you actually disturb the mound. And that's why we tell people, when you treat these fire ant mounds, when you're using one of the direct treatments, you don't want to disturb the mound usually. You want to just kind of slip up there, and you don't have to be stealthy. You just walk up and pour the treatment on top of the mound without disturbing it. Because if you do disturb it, well, they may try to carry the queen to safety through one of those lateral tunnels, and she may be 2 or 3 feet outside the area you're treating by the time you get your treatment up.
Let's talk a little bit about control. That's what we're all probably wondering most about, is controlling fire ants. You obviously talk a lot on the radio and homeowners and garden clubs and so forth. What is some of the information that's good for the homeowner as far as a residential application that you highly recommend or what you've seen effective?
Well, Jeff, what I tell homeowners is the best approach is to knock out fire ants with a 1-2 punch. And the first part of that, the punch number one, is the use of these granular baits. And I'd say if you're only going to use one approach, the baits are the best, because I think they're easy, They're cheap if you use the right rate. They're safe to pets and the applicators, and they work. So they've got a lot of things going for them. The downside of baits is that they can take a while to work, and I mean like two weeks to 2 months to actually work. And when I tell people that, they say, well, that's too long. But if you think, if you use them preventively, if you go ahead and put them out 3 times a year is what I have to do at my house, and I use the holidays, Easter, 4th of July, and Labor Day, just to remind me, hey, it's time to put out my fire ant bait. When I remember to do that, I get about 90% control, meaning I see 90% fewer mounds than I would if I didn't use my bait.
So what I'm hearing you saying is prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
It really is in the case of fire ants. Now, these baits aren't 100%. They do let some mounds survive for whatever reason, and this is where those topical or individual mound treatments come in, and this can be the white powder that a lot of people are familiar with that you dust over the mound. And it's nice to keep a can of that handy when you're mowing and working in the yard, and when you do see a mound that needs treatment, you can apply that then. But it gets really difficult if you rely on that as your sole way of treating fire ant mounds, because you're continually treating new mounds. You can't ever treat small mounds that you can't see, because you can't see them. You don't know where they are. Whereas when you spread that bait over the entire yard, those ants, even from the small unseen mounds, will gather that bait, bring it back to their colony, feed it to the immature ants, and it will control those as well as the larger mounds.
We need to think of fire ant control as not a sharpshooter, but maybe more of a shotgun, more of a wide, broader. When we're putting out our materials, we need to think the entire yard versus just where we're seeing the mound. Would that be safe to say?
Yeah, that's an important point to stress, is that when you put these baits out, these granular baits, you don't put them on the mound. You actually use a little spreader and spread them over the yard. Now, most of these baits, it doesn't take very much, only about a pound and a half to the acre.
Right.
So that's not very much bait.
That's not. And I'm assuming that we can use one of these little handheld spreaders or whatever type of applicator we want to use. That's what I use in my yard, and it works real well. And like you said, it doesn't take a lot, but you get a little bit across the yard. I know I've seen great diminishing in the fire ants each year. I don't know if I'm hitting them on the holidays like you, but I am hitting them at least 2 times a year, and I'm seeing a great decrease in what I have had when I first moved here.
They really are very effective, and like you said, you can't use your fertilizer spreader to apply most of these baits, because that would put out way too much. You need that little handheld spreader and set it on about the lowest setting. It'll look like, and you'll feel like, you're not putting out enough bait, but it will be an adequate amount.
That's right. And that's the key for folks that I've talked to too, is just what you said. You don't think you're putting out enough, so you're tempted to raise the rate and say, well, if one is good, three ought to be 3 times better, and that's not true, and you don't want to do that. What about now a hot mound? You've got the kid's birthday party, you got the big jump set coming out, or you've got the clowns or the horses coming over, and you need to knock down that mound today, and you don't have time to wait for baits. Now, you mentioned to put some a sprinkle on it. I know I've read some of your work as well, and you say liquids as well. Is that what you still feel like is a good application?
Yeah. In those situations where you've got to kill a mound out today, it needs to be gone tomorrow. Even those white powders that I mentioned, the acephate treatments or the pyrethroids, like the delta mefren powders, they're not going to work fast enough. You're going to need to use a liquid drench in that case. And what you do with these liquid drenches is there's a lot of products out there, and they're listed in our publication, and I'll give the reference for it when we finish here. And you mix a small amount of that liquid insecticide in about 2 gallons of water, and you mix that up, and then you just pour that over the mound. And if you do a good job of soaking that mound, you'll get control of that mound within less than 24 hours.
Okay. What about if you've got a can of ant spray, would that work for just a quick knockdown for a party or something?
But those aren't going to be very effective if you're thinking of the aerosol cans that say ant and roach killer or whatever. No, that's a good point. That's not a good way to control fire ants.
Okay.
It won't be very effective.
All right. When fire ants are foraging and going out and looking for food, is there a time of year that they're foraging more heavily than others, or are they pretty consistently foraging year-round. Wintertime, I got to think that they're probably not foraging very much at all.
Yeah, once we get really cool temperatures, they pretty much stay in their mound. But from early spring on through late fall, fire ants are active and they're out there foraging. During the hot part of the summer, they tend to forage more at night. And then during the cool parts of the spring and fall, they tend to forage more during the day. That's just based on temperatures. They're just more active at optimal temperatures.
Right. I've heard people trying some home remedies like garlic, grits, pouring hot boiling water. I even had a person ask me if Coke would work, gasoline. What do you tell folks when they ask you about these home remedies? Have you found any to work?
Well, there was a research scientist in Texas that tested a lot of those, like the Coke and the grits and things of that nature. He actually did a controlled experiment. He proved that those don't work. Boiling water can work in certain situations. I've actually used it myself when we had really small children in a play yard and we didn't want any insecticide residue there. If you do it properly, meaning you're going to use about 3 gallons of boiling water to drench a mound during a wet period when the mound is high, you can get about 60% control. You're not going to control every mound, but you can get control with that boiling water approach. The key to that is during the hot part of the summer when you don't see the mounds sticking up above the grass because they're down deep in the soil, you're not going to be able to control them then. But when it's wet like it is now, you mentioned how many fire ant mounds we're seeing here in September and going into October. That's just because the ground is wet, so they're nesting up above the ground, and they would be susceptible to that then.
Okay. How does the rain affect a fire ant? I mean, we don't see them. How do they survive with all that water coming through their mound?
Well, the way fire ants deal with water is and moisture in the soil is that when the soil is dry and it's hot, they move down in the soil to stay cool. And then in early spring and late fall, they tend to build their mounds higher. When the soil's wet, they'll build their mounds higher. If it just totally floods them out, they still won't perish. What they will do then is gather their brood up into basically a ball of living fire ants, and they'll float off with the water. And then when the flood recedes, they'll establish a new mound somewhere else.
Where's the queen in there? Is she in the middle?
She's in the middle of that ball. Yeah, they're caring for her during that time as well as the brood.
Would that have been typical, say, during the hurricane, when Hurricane Katrina came? Would we have seen that with the flooding down in South Mississippi?
Definitely would have seen a lot of that. In fact, there were some problems of people getting stung by running into one of these balls of floating fire ants. And, you know, one thing that's been observed is that when you have a flooding event in a floodplain, fire ants are the first ants to recolonize that area.
Wow. They're tough little rascals, aren't they?
They're persistent. They really are.
I read an interesting fact that Americans have spent an amazing $2 billion with a B annually to fight against fire ants.
I wasn't aware of that, but I'm not surprised. We do spend a lot of money on fire ant control each year.
We really do.
You can just look in any lawn and garden center and see how many different products they sell for fire ant control.
Dr. Layton, tell us your web address so folks, if they want to go and look at some of the papers that are available there at Mississippi State, what's the best way for them to go and check those out?
Okay, and that is a good question because in our discussion on control, we didn't mention any specific products, but they're listed in a publication we have called Control Fire Ants in Your Yard. And you can find that online just by going to www.msucares.com and then clicking on Insects and Diseases, I think it says Insects and Diseases, and then it'll pop up Insects and a variety of other things. Click on Insects again, and then you'll see fire ants, and that'll get you to our fire ant website.
Okay. Well, did you want to mention any of the controls here? Did you have any on top of your head that you know that you like? I know the one I've used lately and have had a lot on the baits is I've used Over and Out. That's the label that I've got at the big box stores, and it seems to be pretty good and working fairly well. Seems like I've tried them all. I've been pretty pleased with that.
Right. Yeah, of the baits, the ones that I like best, there's quite a few, but Amdro and Award are two of the more common ones that work real well. Mm-hmm. The Over and Out product is actually not a bait. It's a contact insecticide, so it works differently. The fire ants don't collect that bait and carry carry it back to the mound. It actually kills the fire ants as they nest and travel through the soil.
Okay. So
it does provide long-term control.
Okay. Well, good. Very good. Is there anything else you'd like to say to us about fire ant control or fire ants?
Well, I think that largely covers it. The point is you'll never get rid of them and just be able to sit back and say, I've done it. They're gone and I've won the battle. But you can stay ahead of the game if you're just persistent, put those baits out on a preventive basis two or three times a year, and then keep your little can of dry mound powder treatment available handy so you can treat mounds that pop up in between your bait applications.
Well, you make it almost sound like fire ants are as certain as taxes and death.
I think in the southeast they are. Yeah. We think they are limited in their northern expansion by colder temperatures. If you think about when the ground freezes deep enough, since they nest in the ground, they're not going to be able to survive there. But
right. They've
definitely colonized all of Mississippi and most of Tennessee.
They seem to be everywhere I travel in the southeast. My counterparts seem to all be battling with them, so there's definitely a market out there, and they'll definitely be there, it looks like, through our career as well. Well, Dr. Layton, we really appreciate you taking time to be with us today. I encourage folks to check out a lot of Dr. Layton's work and publications on the Mississippi State MSUCares.com webpage. You can see there and a lot of other great information there on gardening. Dr. Layton, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
I enjoyed it, Jeff. Good to visit with you.
Okay, thank you.